Good afternoon, good evening, or good night, depending on when you're listening to us. But thanks so much for listening to the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast. I am your trusty host, Neil Horwitz. You can follow me on Twitter at NJH287 and get more info on the podcast as well as other content at dsmsports.net. Got a really great show for you today. We have the man behind some of the most popular social media in the NBA, and that is TJ Ansley, who is Director of Digital for the Portland Trail Blazers. Well known for all their digital and social media, and we're going to learn a lot from TJ coming up on today's podcast. But before we get to our interview with TJ, we have this episode's helpful tool. This episode's helpful tool is called Smart URL. It's a free service, so that's the best way to start out, right? And it is a URL shortener, but it does even more than most URL shorteners, more than Bitly, more than Owly. What you can do with Smart URL is it will redirect based on a country, for example. So if you're working with a sports team, you might have different people from different countries go to different places depending on merchandise that they might want, language that they might need to see something in, or whatever the case may be. It's also really handy, especially for folks that work in retail, where you're working across the board with a lot of different folks speaking a lot of different languages in different countries. Also, in addition to the geolocation automatic detection, you can change the destination without changing the URL, which is really cool. So you can use one URL, whether you're putting it on a poster in the arena or the rink or the stadium, whether it's on your website, on an ad, on a social media page. You can change the destination URL without actually having to change that smart URL, which means a lot more versatility and not having to reprint things or repost things or worry about things. You can just change it on the back end. And even better, there is cloud editing and admin available on Smart URL. So you can have multiple people dealing with the edits and changes in Smart URL. You can designate who's allowed to do so, and allows for some great collaborative work, so it's not just dependent on one person that has to go in and make the changes and keep everyone abreast. Also, you can look at performance, just similar to what you can see with Bitly or Google Campaign URL Shortener or many of the other ones. You can look at performance by day, by country, by referral source, and also by something called IQID. And that allows you to get some really granular information on where your referrals are coming from. Being able to track down very much detail to the source of where the URL is being clicked on. So really some great information that can help you hone your marketing skills, figure out where the best places are to put that URL, and you know what's working. Is it digital? Is it social? Is it something that's outdoors? There's a lot of different things you can learn from that IQID. So we just scratched the surface. There's a lot of cool free features with this free helpful tool called Smart URL. Check it out at smarturl.it. Give it a shot. Play around with it. See if you like it. See if it's superior to whatever URL shortener you're currently using. And take a look. And that is this episode's helpful tool, Smart URL. Play with it. Get to know it. And see if you like it. All right, that was this episode's helpful tool. We'll be coming right back with a really good interview with Director of Digital Media for the Portland Trail Blazers, TJ Ansley. All right, that was this episode's helpful tool. It's called Smart URL. Our guest, it looks like they use a proprietary URL shortener. You see their Rip City URLs coming across their social media. And the leader of, among the leaders of Rip City is our guest today. We are happy to be joined by TJ Ansley, Director of Digital Media for the Portland Trail Blazers. Welcome to the podcast, TJ.
Hey, Neil. Thanks for having me.
And we are delighted to have TJ on today. We're going to have a great conversation, and he is talking to us the morning after a big Game 4 win for the Blazers to keep their hopes alive in the first round of the playoffs. So really kudos to him for burning the midnight oil and still coming back to talk to us today. But TJ, before we get into this the main substance of our conversation today, you know, we like to get to know all of our guests. You're living the dream. You have an awesome job. So tell us a little about your career path, how you got started, jobs along the way, and any tips you have for anyone that wants to be the next TJ Ansley.
Well, hopefully you don't want to be exactly like me. No, I'm just kidding. But, you know, like I said, thanks for having me. It's been quite a journey to get to Portland. I'm originally from Ohio. I grew up in a small town, always played sports my whole life, and then kind of didn't want to give up that the dream of being in professional sports. So went to Eastern Michigan University, played baseball for a little bit, and then kind of transitioned into more of the day-to-day, getting into the work world, and actually was fortunate enough to get an internship with the Detroit Tigers, doing kind of promotional and marketing stuff for during game days. And, you know, love baseball, so I wanted to stay with that. And I admire anybody that is in Major League Baseball, because it is a grind. It's 162 games, and I'm not sure how they do it, but they do it, and they're awesome at it. So
what did you study in school, TJ, and how'd you sort of start preparing for that sports career?
I studied communication technology, which is kind of a mixture of different, you know, web design, accounting, marketing, you know, anything you can think of, and it's all mixed into one and kind of a digital realm. At first, it was just kind of one of those things. I kind of started doing more TV production, and then kind of transitioned into more of the web world when the web started to get really big. So, you know, it was at the infancy of, right before kind of teams just had websites, or, you know, radio stations, or anybody just had something to post event information. So after I was done with the Tigers, I actually started working for a radio station and was doing marketing and promotions as well. But then I moved into the part of the job duties, let me go back a little bit, was also the website. So as I mentioned, it was more than just a event listing, or hey, we're at this bar to give away tickets, that kind of stuff. So kind of made it into more of a blog news type area, and that kind of morphed into a new job with the radio stations, and was the webmaster for a news station and a sports station in Detroit. And that turned out really well. And then I ended up moving back to Columbus, Ohio, and worked for the Major League Soccer team, the Columbus Crew there.
Very nice.
And became the digital content editor there, and kind of transformed what they were doing. They used to be on a proprietary system with kind of shared Major League Baseball's platform, and they kind of went off of that and became their own kind of content driver. So each team basically had their own content editor and chief, or whatever you want to call it.
Okay.
So kind of had free rein to just be creative with it and create content on our own instead of relying on somebody else to do it.
And
so
tell me, TJ, real quick, with both the radio station and then later with the Columbus Crew, what were sort of some of the early objectives that you were looking at with from a content perspective? I mean, this is before the phrase content marketing probably even means what it means today.
Sure. Yeah, I think with at least the radio station, it was more of just I was trying to find ways to take what they had on the air and put it on the web. So, you know, it was kind of before podcast really became popular at all. So, you know, taking interviews that they had with a beat writer or a player and making sure people on the website could hear it. You know, it was a process at first, and I know, you know, every radio station now is very accustomed to putting audio on the web or even in people's hands and their phones. So that was kind of our main objective there. And then moving into soccer world, you know, kind of being that news leader instead of relying on the newspaper,
or TV. The paradigm was already shifting.
Yeah, for sure. And it was kind of interesting to do that. You know, I'm not a very good technical writer, so I'm not the one kind of writing that content. You know, we had beat writers and a couple other content providers, but just kind of organize that and kind of making our own newsroom, basically. In Columbus, it's a very heavy to Ohio State Buckeyes, which is, you know, it should be, because they're the empire there. They do great things, but you know, a soccer team there doesn't really get as much attention as it should, and you know, they've won a title and all that kind of stuff, but you know, creating your own news, why not have that in-house and control the message there?
Definitely. So tell me about where you went from the Crew, and how'd your career progress from there?
Sure. I was there a few years, and you know, redid the website a couple times, you know, build that platform up and make sure that you know, page views were constantly going up. So we were doing something right. And then I was fortunate enough to meet my boss here, Dwayne Hankins. And he remembered me from a conference we were at and said, hey, we have this this opening here in Portland. And kind of took a big step to move the family out here to Portland. And it's been great so far.
Definitely. And before we move ahead in the conversation, any really big tips or insights that you can give to someone that wants to come up in the sports business world themselves?
I think definitely do as much as you can, especially being in the digital media world. You kind of touch every department. So, you know, get to know what ticket sales, what they're doing, what the lingo is behind it, you know, sponsorship, what they're looking for and, you know, different areas that they that clients want to sponsor, or, you know, community relations is always huge in every department or in every organization. So, you know, always make sure that you're kind of listening to what everybody's doing and how you can kind of create content out of it.
It's a great insight, and really making sure that everyone in the organization understands what you're doing to help them, especially from a social media perspective, because it, like you said, it does touch every single department, and digital is the sort of the gasoline to the fire of every department. That's great.
No, yeah, definitely. It's and that's another point that you made is make sure that they know that you want to help them. It's not the, you know, social media isn't just a bulletin board of posting everything. So they need to know your strategy as well. And, you know, if we're not posting stuff about tickets all the time, there's a reason why we're not doing that. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, fans don't want to see tickets thrown down at them all the time. You know, make sure that they understand what you're doing to help promote their business as well.
Right. And at the end of the day, when you build up that credibility and that trust, when you do post the ticket from a sales message, whether it's one out of every 10, 20 posts, whatever, it's that much more effective. That's great.
That's, yeah, correct.
Well, let's talk briefly about, you know, how you joined the Blazers. It was recent. It was in the offseason. And Dwayne Hankins, obviously, he was relatively new to the organization as well. So I guess it was sort of similar to the crew where you came in and it was build a brand, you know, help us do digital right and help us reach the fans in a new and more engaging manner. I mean, what was kind of the objective and the charge for you coming in with Dwayne?
Sure. I think, you know, coming in, just kind of redo the platform, before, you know, I got here, it was kind of disjointed a little bit. There were some really cool things that they were doing before I got here. So I want to kind of keep some of that going. But definitely, I think we're one of the teams that was not on the NBA platform, and we kind of wanted to make sure that was a cohesive kind of approach to our website and making sure fans can get to what they need, whether it's, you know, game recaps or, you know, tickets or, you know, just make sure it's all joined together in an easy approach.
What are your general thoughts about the NBA platform versus individual clubs kind of doing their own thing? Are there benefits and costs to both sides, or why did the Blazers decide to go the direction they go?
I wasn't in the discussions before I got here, obviously, but you know, I could see some benefits of going alone because you can kind of be that, you know, no pun intended, you're a trailblazer and try to come up with your own strategy. Which, you know, they got some kudos for it. So, you know, but definitely there is when I joined, I was so used to being on the Drupal platform. So I think that was a good thing to know is, you know, we're on that right now with the entire NBA is. And the NBA has been really kind of leading that charge of, you know, they're really good and social on all the teams, but they're also kind of thinking ahead also with responsive design. They were the first league in the United States, I don't know about the world, but definitely in the United States, to be a responsive league. So all of our sites are viewed on mobile, tablets, and desktop the same way. So our you know, they saw that traffic going that way, and they kind of took the charge. And I think within probably 3 or 4 months, they switched all 30 teams to responsive, which is a huge undertaking on their part, and got to give them kudos for that.
I'll bet. So what was sort of the first couple of steps that you took to when you did take this position? I mean, it sounds like obviously getting the content more consistent and more easily accessible was first and foremost on your mind. What was sort of the first couple steps you took, and what were the Blazers missing until you came on board, until Dwayne and you came on board?
Sure. I think some of the first steps, and obviously happened a little before I got here, but we actually moved one of our beat writer, who wasn't a beat writer at the time. He was just kind of a jack of all trades. We moved him into a beat writer position where he's actually, you know, he doesn't have an office here in the Moda Center. He's he's at home. He goes to practices. He goes on the road with the team. So he is solely focused on providing content, and it's, you know, and he'll say, you know, it's been great, but it's also a lot of work. You don't realize how strenuous the season is, and he's done a great job so far. And he kind of his name's Casey Holdon. He's actually off of our platform. We actually have his own blog. It's called ForwardCenter.net, and he basically is about 20% of our traffic, which, wow, you know, it's awesome. So he's driving that content. He knows where the stories are, and you know, we're always in constant communication. Where finding the best stories, or even just a little blog piece about embedding a vine of a shot or something like that. So,
role to be objective, or is it kind of expected he's an embedded team reporter and there's certain things and angles he won't discuss?
I think it's both. He knows certain things that he's not allowed to say because he's with the team, and he knows, right, he knows his, right, boundaries, and he wants to stay doing that. And not to say that he can't write that. He could write some objective pieces, and he has. But, you know, our players actually understand that, and they know because they see him all the time. That's his job. And it's good to have his face in front of them all the time, too, because they trust him. And,
definitely.
You know, we were, we took some photos and did some interviews in the summer when some media members weren't around, so it's they trust them, so it's good to have that focus there.
Okay, so certainly it sounds like the embedded reporter helped you guys really start to become more of a content machine and more focused on that. Was there any discussions in terms of getting the Blazers to have more of a recognizable brand, or having them be known for something and be share worthy and be someone that a team that you want to follow when you're living in the greater Portland area?
Yeah, it's I wasn't too familiar with what Portland was when I moved out here, but now, since I've been here almost 2 years now, it's definitely a very passionate fan base. And especially last night when we were down a few, you know, probably 10 points or so, and tried to make a comeback, nobody in the stands was sitting down for at least the fourth quarter. It was unbelievable. And just having that passion helps drive content. I mean, we can really put anything we want out there, and fans will consume it, and especially during playoffs times. They just want to know more.
Is that something you guys can almost take for granted, or has it been a process to get that kind of passion out of the fans on a consistent basis?
No, I think that passion's always been there, at least from what I hear from everybody that's a native Oregonian. And then that's going back to that, too, is when I got here, they were kind of they were considered the Portland Trailblazers. There's obviously a whole state here, so mm-hmm. they kind of shifted their focus in marketing and created more of an Oregonian and, you know, Northwest team. We have people from Seattle that drive down every game to come to games. Right across the river is Vancouver, Washington, and they're not from Portland, but they want to be known. So we've actually last year, we made window clings with the shape of Oregon and said Rip City in it, but we also made some ones that said the shape of Washington and had Rip City in it. So we're just kind of growing that kind of footprint of our fan base, and we're trying to make sure that Rip City is kind of everywhere.
Very cool. And so give me a brief rundown. What is Rip City? What do you want the Blazers to be known for in Portland and in Washington and in Vancouver? And what is that brand, and how do you guys use digital to reinforce it?
So That's a great question, actually. You know, I don't think it's just digital that does that. It's right. Obviously
all channels.
Marketing, promotions, community, everything.
Right, game presentation, everything. Definitely.
Yeah, for sure. And you'll see that if you you see some of our videos, you'll see kind of the background feel to the opens and stuff. You'll see like waterfalls and the beach and all this kind of stuff to show that we're more than just in the city of Portland. You know, the term Rip City came up in the 70s with our legendary broadcaster Bill Shonley, who just kind of blurted out Rip City at an amazing moment. So it just kind of stuck, and people kind of take that to heart, and they want to. It's more than just kind of a city, I would say. It's more just kind of like, you know, a persona of this is, I'm a fan of this, and you know, I want to be part of the Portland Trailblazers, and that's kind of what Rip City is.
And you definitely see it in some of the social media and the public facing communications that you guys have in digital, and even in the game presentation, I'm sure as well. Although I haven't been to one myself, is that there's certainly a little bit of swagger to the Blazers, and you guys like to have fun with your fans, really echoing what they say, you know, using your players' nicknames, using GIFs and all that, using images. So that's obviously intentional. But how does that really play into what you guys are trying to accomplish from a greater overall objective, and to help you guys stand out, I guess, from the crowd, when whether it's the Timbers or University of Oregon or whoever?
Yeah, I think it's you know, everybody's got their own voice with social media, and I think we're just trying to, you know, talk with our fans and not at them. You know, we're obviously going to put up links and that kind of stuff just because, you know, we want to let fans know we wrote an article, or hey, here's a video, or. Mm-hmm. But you know, just the constant interaction during games. There's hundreds of people that are tweeting live at the game about play by play. It's they don't need the Trailblazer account to tell them what's going on the court. So you know, our job is to kind of make fun, you know, have some fun with it, and you know, be a little bit loose, and you know, like you said, have animated GIFs and all this kind of stuff that are in the during game action, because you know. Sometimes, you know, games start to run together and they kind of feel like the same game you just played the night before. So having some fun with it, our fans seem to enjoy it, and also kind of reward our fans too for following us. You know, we do tweets of the night every night when we're playing well, or even when we're bad. So just having that interaction with our fans has gone a long way and helped us grow.
So when you guys are preparing for a game, whether it's regular season or maybe especially for the playoffs, are you guys literally sitting down and saying, let's make sure we put together, you know, one image or GIF for each player? Or you know, do you have that stuff sort of in the arsenal ready to go, or is it really ad hoc and happening during the games?
Well, we're kind of sometimes it is in the spur of the moment. But definitely, we do have a nice Dropbox full of animated GIFs or even created images that we do. I know you tweeted at me last night saying, you know, great job on the Myers Legend one, because you know, Myers actually had a really awesome game last night.
Oh, and we've had
that image for quite a while during the season. We didn't really get to use it that much, but. You know, it's stuff like that where, you know, make sure that we kind of have that idea in the back of our head and create it on off days and just throw it in the Dropbox, and then everybody knows where it is in case, you know, something happens, or, you know, just to get it out there for our fans.
And when you guys are planning that kind of stuff, whether it's a Myers Legend or whatever the case may be, is that something that's communicated with team ops, with the player themselves, with PR, to say, you know, we're going to present Myers Leonard as Myers Legend? Is that okay? You know, or is that just some they trust you guys won't do anything that you don't think a player would be comfortable with?
No, and I think we know where to draw the line. You know, we're not going to put our players in a bad light. That Myers Legend thing that actually came out from, you know, a bunch of our fans have been saying that all year. Whenever he hits, you know, he's a 7-foot guy and he's leading the league in a 3-point attempts. Like, that's kind of ridiculous. But, you know, he hits them and he's a great percentage. So fans just started calling him Myers Legend, and we're like, okay, we'll kind of play off of that a little bit. You know, the image we're using is not bad at all. And I think our beat writer actually talked to him about it, and he doesn't mind it at all. He's kind of, you know, having fun with it as well. And, you know, some of the other images we like to do is, you know, not just post a regular picture, you know, have some treatment to it or create some graphics around it so it's, you know, a little more classy than just a game action photo. So we're doing that type of stuff, and like I said, we're thinking ahead a little bit, and we like to have those in our arsenal and use them whenever we can.
And I really love the way that you described how the Myers Legend, for example, came from the fans organically, and you guys saw that conversation, you listened proactively, and you executed on it. And that's probably the way that most successful digital and social executions really start is listening to the fans.
Yeah, not like I said before, we do this tweets of the game, so we're watching our fans, we're watching our mentions, we're watching hashtags, and you know, when we see a funny tweet or even just a great tweet about something that's going on during the game, we're going to take that, put it in a Storify, and put it in an article. So it's another piece of content, and it's funny. We did it all last year, and we gave some prizes away, but then we kind of almost forgot to do it our opening night. And, you know, it was probably 20 minutes after the game, and we saw a bunch of tweets saying, hey, where's the tweets of the night? So we kind of had to go back and put that together really quickly, and, fans actually appreciate it every night that we do it.
Oh, yeah, the real prize for fans is just being recognized and knowing that you're listening to what they're saying. That's a great point, a great insight.
Yeah.
How about when you guys are looking at then some of this content you guys are producing and see something go viral, so to speak, or even if it doesn't go viral, what do you guys look at from a content perspective? Maybe it differs in-game versus out-of-game to say this content worked, this was successful. Is it retweets? Is it interactions? Is it reach?
That's a good question. We're always trying to think of what our engagement rate is. We're never going to be the amount of followers that the Lakers have per se. They've earned that. They're the Lakers. They're kind of a worldwide brand. We're kind of up here in the Northwest with a smaller market, but we kind of pride ourselves on being more engaged with our fans. Like I said, finding best tweets of the night, or even just replying to somebody that says, hey, it's my birthday, you know, can you say happy birthday? So you just do that, and just kind of it goes a long way with them. And we're just trying to find the best engagement rate that we can, and do as much as we can for that.
And that's where it almost is a benefit and an advantage to having a smaller but more engaged audience. The Lakers, you know, even if they hire, you know, a half dozen people to track all their mentions, they still might not be able to handle all the traffic that comes in or ever get engagement rates that even get close to the size of their fan base. So you guys can have those more personalized interactions and can capture tweets of the night because it's easier to have that smaller engaged fan base perhaps.
Yeah, and it's I wouldn't say it's easier, but because there's more people maybe tweeting about the Trailblazers that aren't following us. So it's our job to make sure that they know about us and give us a follow or keep tweeting about us. So we have fans that are on the East Coast, we have fans that are in France, we have fans in Brazil. So trying to find that medium of how to get to those fans.
And how about trying to turn that engagement ultimately into dollars and cents, into revenue producers, and maybe even telling the ROI story, for lack of a better term? Are you guys looking at the most engaged content and saying, this is something that we can start to put a sponsor behind? Or are we tracking the traffic coming from social media to ticket sales? How is that tied into some of the revenue drivers for the team?
I think it's more on the sponsorship side. Sponsors really want to be in the digital space, but they sometimes don't know what the digital space means, or they're kind of just throwing that out there to say, I want to be on that. So it's it's our job to kind of come up with something creative, fun, and also drives page views, clicks, all that kind of stuff that a sponsor really looks at. So you know, getting to that is tough. So you kind of have to build something up or have something creative that our sponsors want to be part of. Going back to the ticket posts, we're pretty fortunate to have a really, like I said, really passionate fan base that likes to come to games. So we, you know, there's not a ton that we would do for tweeting tickets or anything like that. So we kind of shift our focus to more digital marketing with that, with sponsored related posts or promoted tweets or anything like that, to kind of gain that different audience that maybe isn't following us or it's more of a kind of more digital marketing on that end.
Do you guys do any paid social media advertising or not quite, not much?
No, we definitely do. It's okay. I think one of our goals is to get people who have never been here before and hopefully move them up the sales funnel and get them to season ticket holders. So exactly. Starting with those, like I said, promoted tweets or promoted Facebook posts to, sell single game tickets or, that kind of stuff.
Certainly, and going back to the sponsorship piece, I mean, I know you and I talked briefly offline before this interview about some of the highlight videos you guys are producing for the playoffs. Now, of course, the playoffs have a couple of title sponsors for the Trailblazers with Toyota and Moda Health. But is that sort of how the process generally works? Is where you guys create a piece of content that consistently does well? You get enough numbers to maybe pitch to a sponsor, to a partner, and saying, hey, do you want to be part of this content that we're producing after every game, a highlight video? Is that how it works, or is it more a sponsor comes to you and says, create something for us to brand?
No, I think it goes both ways. I don't think we're quite into the sponsored content yet. I listen to a lot of podcasts, and some of those podcasts are doing like the startup podcast is a good example. They're really, it's an interesting way to sell something within a podcast. So I don't think we're quite to that point yet, but we'll create certain pieces of content and say, hey, these are doing very well. You should throw a logo or something on that. There's a long way because we're still kind of, from when I got here, still trying to get some of our digital infrastructure together and making sure that it's, within the eye test and making sure it's good for our fans. And, fans do like our stuff. It's just making sure that we have, we can return that investment onto our sponsors. So it's, whether it's like a recap or anything like that, ESPN does a great job with all their banner ads and all their integrated sponsors there. So we'll get there at some point. We're doing a decent job right now, but I think there's always room to grow.
How much are you guys doing in the analytics side of social and really digital in general? And do you guys have a dedicated person on analytics, or and what's going on in that realm for the Blazers right now?
We don't have a dedicated person. I think it's more of between a few of us here. Mm-hmm. And Chris, our managing editor, is kind of taking it upon himself to kind of trying to come up with that engagement index that I was kind of talking about. We really didn't have one before. And the league is, sometimes they weight a little bit differently than we think it should be, but at least it's a good measurement for ourselves to say, hey, this tweet did this in an engagement index, so we should tweet similar to that and keep within that, whatever percentage that would be. And same goes to if we have like a sponsor that wants to tweet something, or we tweet something for sponsor, to make sure we kind of try to get to that point as well, that percentage, and so we know that it's a good investment for our sponsor.
And I think at the end of the day, it's not drowning in the data, but finding the data that's going to actually give you some insight. I mean, I'm sure you can tell me that the best posts are generally the ones that talk about the Blazers winning a game versus a loss. It's not going to do as well engagement-wise or a practice photo, for example. So it's about finding the data that's going to actually tell you something and be able to activate on, I guess.
Yeah, and it's part of that engagement index we're kind of coming up with, is try how to take that out where we say, Blazers win, because we know that's going to do very well, is how to take those certain pieces out and making sure that the number that we come to is a good number.
It's definitely a challenge. I'll be interested to see how you guys progress in there for sure. We're having a great conversation here on the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast with Director of Digital Media for the Portland Trailblazers, TJ Ansley. Coming up soon, our shareable stat, but I have a few more minutes left with TJ. So we talked a little about analytics. So let's also look at then how you guys decide where to devote all that content, all those resources. One thing I came across recently, which was really cool, really impressive, was the Trailblazers Year in Review on Tumblr, which was great. And you don't see a lot of sports teams posting on Tumblr. So what goes into the decision to, you know, where the Blazers want to put content, where you guys want to produce content for, and using those limited resources you have in 24 hours in the day?
Yeah, I kind of chuckled when you said Tumblr there, because we kind of didn't think about it for a little while, and that site that you mentioned was not necessarily meant to go on Tumblr. It just was an easier thing for us to code, so it turned out better than we thought, and we had a lot of people playing that around here in the office, and it's kind of one of those songs that we kind of just thought of and just put it with a. Put it with the animated GIFs. Kind of devoting time and effort to each one of those platforms is, you know, any social or digital person's worst nightmare, because you want to make sure you get all of the attention you can out of a piece of content. Mm-hmm. Like I said, we kind of let Tumblr on the wayside a little bit until we kind of came back to it and started posting a little bit more. Google Plus is a really interesting one. Nobody kind of knows what it really does, or we kind of just double up on what we do on other things with that one.
Right, you almost got to pay lip service. It is Google.
Exactly. So Facebook, Twitter are the main traffic drivers. Our website for sure. You want to make sure that's buttoned up, because that's kind of your first impression on a brand is. Go into their website, because you're plastering that web address everywhere you can see.
Right.
Also the mobile app. Mobile apps are pretty popular now, and they need to be, because you live with your phone in your hand the entire time. We just came up with just came out with our mobile watch app too. The Apple Watch. I ironically do not have a watch, so I don't even know what it looks like yet. But it is
most people don't right now. It's more you got to be like Elon Musk to have an Apple Watch right now.
Exactly. So it's great to be kind of in that charge of the first group of teams to be out there with an app watch or a watch app to get out there, but still, you kind of got to be in that space to be relevant.
So are you sort of leading the way based on kind of observation and gut feel, or are you actually sitting down and saying, let's evaluate on a weekly basis how much we're devoting to Instagram, to Twitter, to Facebook, and do we need to change that based on the engagement we're getting on each platform, or should we skew the ratios more?
No, I think it's kind of a mixture of both. You kind of have that gut feeling every once in a while. You read some magazine articles or blogs or anything like that to say, especially with Instagram, you can hashtag emojis now, which what the heck does that really even mean?
But,
but we're going to try it and see if it works and, gain some more followers or something like that. But, it's definitely, it keeps you up at night, cause you're wondering, oh, I should have posted this, or, hey, I should have done this. But, we're also looking at the analytics and looking to, we're tracking probably, I think it's weekly or even biweekly or something like that, but just to make sure that we're giving the right attention to everything.
That's the way to go, is definitely to go by a little bit of gut and also make sure you are paying attention to the numbers. Before we go to this episode's Shareable Stat, TJ, I did want to touch briefly on your experience last night we do get the pleasure of talking to you the day after an exciting game that keeps your season alive, but 24 hours ago you didn't know what today was going to be like. You could have woken up today and the season would be over and you would have a whole bunch of off-season activities to start posting about, but now you have a game 5 to look forward to and possibly a game 6 back in Portland. So what was the process like during the game last night? Are you guys simultaneously preparing for an end-of-season content push versus a game 5 content?
Yeah, actually, we, you know, our a couple of our guys, we didn't know if they were going to get on the plane today to go to Memphis. So, you know, they didn't even pack anything. So they were waiting until the end of the game to get home and say goodbye and get on a plane today. So, but yeah, we were kind of mid-game. We were, you know, we started off really great last night, you know, thinking, okay, great, we're going to go to game five, you know, then halftime, that kind of stuff happens, and, you know, you start getting down a little bit, and then we actually had a few videos ready, just to, you know, like, thank you,
right.
Fans, that kind of stuff, to, you know, let our fans know we appreciate them. It's, you know, this is why we do it. We're here to bring our fans together and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, we have that stuff in our arsenal ready to go whenever. You know, it's really nicely produced package, but we also want to make sure that we're ready and nimble to go on if we win. So, you know, we were fortunate enough to do that. Had all of our typical game night stuff ready, and then also our upcoming game stuff ready as well.
And I imagine those conversations happen maybe even at the end of the regular season before the playoffs even start. Are you guys talking about what do we need to have ready for when that last game does come, whether it's with the Larry O'Brien Trophy or not?
Yeah, it'd be nice to have the Larry O'Brien Trophy. But yeah, definitely we have those. We're pretty tight knit group here. We're you know, we sit pretty close together. So we're always bouncing ideas off each other and, hey, do you have that stuff ready for tonight? Or, hey, do you have that ready if we lose tonight? So we also use a program called Slack. You probably heard of it.
Okay, yeah, definitely.
So we're always throwing, it's kind of like a chat room, and we're just kind of throwing stuff like that around in the game too, so we can know it. We can have everything ready when we need to.
Oh, that's really makes sense. Well, TJ, I have so many more questions I want to ask you. The Blazers just produce so much great content out there. But we'll have a little more fun with you coming up in our TJ's Take segment. But first, we'll be right back with this episode's Shareable Stat. Coming right back at you.
Great conversation with TJ. The man is just very thoughtful, knows what he's doing, is a great leader of his team there with the Trailblazers, and has really done a good job cultivating a strategy, a personality, and one that has earned him some deserved acclaim there with the Portland Trailblazers. But we'll have a little more fun and learn some more from TJ in our TJ's Takes segment coming right up. But first, we have this episode's Shareable Stat. And this episode's Shareable Stat comes from a recent Pew Research Center study. We always love to learn from Pew and some of their big statistical studies. And this one looked at smartphone penetration among adults in the U.S. And their most recent finding found that 64% of all U.S. adults, so anyone over the age of 18, owns a smartphone. Now, what does that mean for sports marketers? That means that number is 64%. Well, it's only going to get higher and higher. And by the time you realize it, by the time it's almost too late, the vast majority, if not close to darn near 100% of your fans, will have a smartphone and will expect to be able to interact with the team on their smartphone. So, are you prepared for that? It's even higher in the younger demos, and those are the fans and season ticket holders and corporate leaders of tomorrow, and you need to be ready to meet their demands, their expectations, and also be able to take advantage of all the opportunities that will arise when nearly every fan that walks in your stadium or visits your website has a smartphone. One, you need to make sure you have the infrastructure internally, that people are in place that understand how to make the most of the smartphone. Not just a responsive design for a website, but maybe it's a mobile app and being able to pitch and sell sponsors on a mobile app, being able to execute marketing campaigns via mobile or a mobile website or a mobile app, and taking advantage of all the things like beacon technology, in-seat ordering, using data from tracking to make sure that you're taking full advantage of the fact that that smartphone penetration is getting to such a high level in the United States. It also means that if you're not already doing so, you really need to have a mobile-first mindset in nearly everything that you do. instead of starting your strategy with, you know, a TV buy or a billboard, it needs to really think about how is this going to look to all those fans who are accessing this information and experiencing it and consuming it on their smartphone. Because oftentimes that's the first place they see it. It's the last place they see it. It's the dominant place they see it. And so you need to make sure that whatever strategy you're developing, mobile is of utmost concern and top of mind. Finally, make sure that you do your homework, do your research, keep a POV, a point of view on all the emerging technologies and opportunities, whether it's from sponsors looking to activate, different ways to market or sell tickets or merchandise, better, smarter ways to target fans using the data that you can collect from their mobile use on their smartphone, whether it's in the venue or away from the venue. There are so many opportunities to come, and even though you may not be executing that newest piece of technology today because not enough fans are adopting it, it's going to happen rapidly. And you need to make sure that when it does, you're ready, and that when as each opportunity, potential opportunity arises, that you have an informed point of view as to how that can help you, your fans, your corporate partners, and everything that can affect the bottom line for your business in sports and beyond. All right, that's this episode's shareable stat. 64% of U.S. adults as of the end of 2014 currently own a smartphone. And folks, that's even higher if you take into account all the United States, including the non-adults. And that number is going to get even higher and higher as Generation Z continues to age and millennials continue to age and more of them own smartphones and are expecting to use them with their sports teams. All right, that's this episode's shareable stat. Ponder it, talk about it, think about it. And use it. All right, that was this episode's Shareable Stat, and we will be right back to have a little fun with Director of Digital for the Portland Trailblazers, TJ Ansley, as we fire some quick-hitting questions at him in our TJ's Takes segment.
All right, that was this episode's Shareable Stat, and it's all about the growth of smartphone ownership in the U.S. It's hard-pressed to find almost anyone without a smartphone these days. I mean, TJ, how often do you come across someone without a smartphone?
Hardly ever. Our owner is basically kind of a very technical person, so we you see smartphones everywhere, and we see it in our arena. You know, I just look around and everybody's on their phone. It's pretty interesting.
Oh yeah, it is only going to get closer and closer to 100% as the years go by. But TJ, we are talking to Director of Digital Media for the Portland Trailblazers, TJ Ansley, and he just survived his interview. Are you now ready for TJ's takes?
I'll see what I can do.
All right, number one for you, TJ. Your favorite social media post or posts of the season so far from the Trailblazers, and why?
We actually kind of had a little fun with the Toronto Raptors, and in all due respect, I love the great North up there, but we are technically a smidge above them in the latitude, so we were actually a little bit more north than the Toronto Raptors, and we just had a little fun with it, and I think our fans enjoy that as well. And you know, we're being polite with everything. We're not here to make enemies, but that was a fun little graphic that we put together for that.
That was awesome. I do remember that interaction with who the true North is and all that. But and that's something yeah. I think that the NBA clubs probably do better than any other pro sports league in the world, in North America at least, is that playing off between teams. And it seems like you guys are definitely one of those that help lead the way, along with, you know, your Phoenixes and Golden States maybe as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
All right, number two for you, TJ. We talked about this a little bit with the engagement index you guys are trying to create, but tell me the metric or metrics that you find most valuable to track on digital and social media, and why.
That's a really good question, because going back to that engagement index, it's kind of a mixture of all that. It's tweet or retweets, follows, favorites, all that kind of stuff, kind of mixed into one kind of super engagement index. On the website, I'm always looking at page views and unique visitors just to mm-hmm. to keep them around and get as many eyeballs on our stuff as we can.
And is that something that that you think more teams across pro sports are doing, is coming up with their own sort of engagement index type metric?
Yeah, actually, I talked to a few people in NCAA that was very interesting. They have actually their own engagement index of digital, like their website. So if a piece of content does this, they give it a rating of a 3 or something like that. And I found that pretty interesting. So I still have to keep on that guy to see if I can get that information from him.
Very cool. Be able to compare content across channels and platforms. Very awesome.
Exactly, yeah.
We touched on this briefly in the interview, TJ. In a handful of words, define and tell me the Trailblazers brand or voice that you guys try to get out there on digital and social and in all channels.
Sure. I think I mentioned this, just talk with our fans and not at them, making sure that we're having fun and kind of, I wouldn't say being a fan ourselves, but, you know, just being loose and not so PR-driven, I guess I would say.
Makes sense. All right, number four, kind of in a similar realm. I always loved the phrase about keeping Portland weird. So tell me just a fun little question for you, TJ. What is one way that Portland is, well, weird?
Oof. That is an interesting question. You know, I haven't been here too long, so I don't want to make anybody upset. one way, people, their beards around here. People love their beards. not just, you know, it's weird. It's an interesting thing.
Do any Blazers fans rock a playoff beard, or is that strictly more of a hockey thing?
Well, I think actually a few of our players are doing it. You know, Robin Lopez has grown a great one, but Chris Kamen has not shaved his beard since he was signed here last summer. So,
oh, wow.
if you take a look at him right now, he's pretty interesting. Which it's actually his birthday today, so it's pretty interesting.
Love it. All right, number five for you, going back to sort of the players, and maybe Chris Kamen's one of them. Tell me the Blazers player or players that get the most social media buzz among fans and why that is.
Damian, obviously, he's got a great PR team behind him, so he's you know, constantly talking about his shoe line, which is great. You know, he's backed by Adidas, which they have a great great team over there, so they kind of help him with that. I think it also happens during our games too. Like last night, Myers Leonard and CJ McCollum kind of had a kind of resurgence and kind of came to the light, and they were actually trending in the United States. So that was kind of interesting to see. Yeah.
Yeah. You never know. Game to game, every player can kind of have their time in the spotlight. Mm-hmm. All right. Number six for you, TJ, the best social media tip or lesson you've learned from all your years of experience.
One fun one, which, actually one very important one is when you're tweeting the word shirt, just make sure you add the R, cause it'll get you.
Oh yeah. I can relate having worked for the Ducks and making sure that first letter was a D and not an F.
There you go. But no, I mean, you know, just double check what you're tweeting out there. Cause you know, you're in charge of, you're basically the first line in the defense of a brand. You don't want to put them in a bad light. Kind of one of the other lessons I learned is just be nimble. Like, you have all of these free tools at your disposal, you know, SoundCloud, YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, all this stuff. So just kind of utilize it and get your message out there the best you can.
Man, I love that. I want to bottle that last minute and a half of your response there and share it as much as possible. That's great. I love it. Nice. All right, number seven for you, TJ. Two-parter, kind of. The non-NBA major pro sports team that does the best job on digital and social media, and the best NBA team besides the Trailblazers, who does the best job on digital and social media. Or just name a couple that stand out to you.
Sure, I think I'll do with the NBA ones because I know they do a really great job. You already mentioned the Suns and the Warriors, but I think you know the Sixers do a great job. They had a not so great year, but they had some great fun with their fans, and they produce some really great graphics. The Atlanta Hawks are doing a fantastic job down there. They got a great team this year, so all eyes are on them. But they're doing a really fun job with their Twitter account and social media, especially they're coming up with Spotify playlists, which are ridiculous and awesome at the same time.
Oh, yeah. We had a great conversation with Micah Hart on a previous podcast, so I definitely appreciate what they're doing. How about the best non-NBA team that catches your eye?
Non-NBA team.
Don't say Columbus Crew.
No. The San Francisco Giants do a great job, and they've been kind of leading the pack for a long time. San Francisco 49ers, I mean, the stuff they do with Vine and their digital media is really interesting. Let's see. Yeah, that's about it. I think that's about it off the top of my head. I know there's really a lot of teams that do a great job out there.
All right, number 8 for you, coming to the end here with Director of Digital Media for the Portland Trailblazers, TJ Ansley, having a great conversation. We talked about Damian Lillard. Sounds like he's probably the most affluent on the team when it comes to effective social media use. So how about the NBA player that's not on the Blazers that best utilizes social media in your mind, and why they think that is?
True. Actually, this was really funny. Ricky Rubio last night was tweeting about Damian Lillard. So, wow. Yeah, it's kind of cool. It's kind of cool to see the other players that aren't in the playoffs tweet about, you know, their profession and their people they admire. So that's pretty interesting. I liked Harrison Barnes with the Warriors. I know he actually had an internship with Facebook, which was very interesting. So. He kind of gets that perspective and does a bunch of that stuff. Kendall Marshall does a pretty cool job. He's one of the lower type players, but he's always tweeting about some funny stuff. But yeah, there's,
I love that. Guys that are proactive are the first step. I love that. And Ricky Rubio is probably helping spread the Trailblazers brand a little bit, and maybe even helping Weber State.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, number 9 for you, TJ. We know that Portland has a ton of great food. They're known for their food trucks as well and some of their creations. So how about the best food you've had in Portland since you've been there?
Oh, wow. Yeah, I'm trying to lose some weight now, so you got me hungry. there's a place, it's called Brunch Box here. It used to be a food cart, but they have a store. So they take two grilled cheeses and put them on top of each other and put a cheeseburger between them. It's pretty fantastic.
Oh man, that sounds like an indulgence you save for when the Blazers do lift Larry O'Brien Trophy. That's when you have one of those. Yeah.
Exactly.
All right, last one for you, TJ. Hopefully the playoffs keep going as long as possible into June for the Blazers. If they do continue to make a run here and take down the Grizzlies and keep going, which player is the team's X factor that'll be behind that?
Well, last night, C.J. McCollum kind of made a name for himself. Actually, Dave Yeager, for the coach for the Grizzlies, said he's basically a nightmare for the Grizzlies right now. So he's getting to the rim pretty quickly and scoring a lot of points.
I love that one. The pride of Lehigh, C.J. McCollum, right?
Exactly.
All right, TJ, you survived TJ's takes. Great fun with you. Now it's your chance to take over the podcast. Tell us your social media all-star to follow, whether it's someone on Twitter, a blogger, whoever they may be, and why they're worth following.
Sure. I like to follow Sean Callahan. I know probably a bunch of your listeners follow him as well. With, coming up with the Seat Conference, he's got a lot of takes there. I also followed Hashtag Sports. They always come up the greatest kind of a bevy of links for you in the morning to get you going and get your ideas going as well.
Hey, a couple of really, really good shout-outs there. I know Sean's been on the podcast, and I'm a loyal listener of the Sports Geek podcast as well, so I love those recommendations. And how about yourself, TJ? Where can our listeners find you as well as the Trailblazers on digital and social?
Sure. It's, I don't like to tote my own horn on my Twitter account, but I'm on Twitter, so it's at TJ Ansley. But you can follow us on at Trailblazers on pretty much any platform. We also have a couple of accounts called at Rip City, which we like to put a lot of our media on as well.
I love it. Well, thank you again so much, TJ, for coming on the podcast. I don't know how you find the time between playoff games, and we're happy to see you continue to go in the first round here, and we'll be rooting for you guys to keep it going.
No problem, Neil. I appreciate the time, and look forward to hearing it.
All right, have a great day. Thanks again.
Thanks, Neil.
Really enjoyed talking to TJ Ansley, Director of Digital for the Portland Trailblazers. Now, he was speaking to us the morning after an exciting NBA playoff game for his Trailblazers. And while they didn't make it out of the first round, they had a tremendous season, really engaged their fans in creative and fun ways. And there's no doubt that TJ is the head of a really talented, really thoughtful digital team there at the Portland Trailblazers. And we're excited to see what they have in store for the end of the season, for the off season, and in the months and seasons to come. But that'll do it for this episode of the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast. Thanks again so much for listening. My name is Neil Horwitz, your host as always. Get more info at dsmsports.net. Follow me on Twitter at NJH287, and we'll see you next time to talk about more sports and social media and digital media on the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast.